Hello and welcome to Massage Therapy Radio. I'm your host, Don Dillon, and tonight's topic is the magic touch, how to make $100,000 per year as a massage therapist. I'd like to, before we introduce our guest tonight, I would like to introduce my co-host, Eric Brown of BodyworkBiz.com. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you here tonight, Donald.
Eric, I wonder, before we introduce our guest, if you could please tell our listeners how they might send, we are live tonight, and they will be able to submit their questions, if you could tell them how they would do that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the nice things about these broadcasts live is that we can take your questions. So if you're on the webcast page right now, all you need to do is scroll down the page if you don't see it already, and you'll see a Q&A box, question and answer box. Just type in your questions into the box. If you can put your name and the city that you're from, that would be great too, and click the submit button. And towards the end of this broadcast, Don will hand the mic over to me, and I'll take as many of those questions and present them to Megan as we have time for.
Excellent. Thank you, Eric. Let's talk a little bit about our guest. Megan Holup graduated from Seattle Massage School in 1995. She has been a licensed massage therapist ever since, and her healing tendencies began at a young age. Throughout high school, she volunteered her summer breaks to assist children with disabilities at Camp Easter Seal, and she was both the state's youngest physical therapist assistant and a live-in nurse for a paraplegic, all before she turned 18 years old. A life of healing and helping others is her passion. The first 7 years of Megan's massage therapy career left her, quote, broke and burned out. The magic touch, how to make $100,000 per year as a massage therapist, is, in effect, a rubs-to-riches story of how she turned her career around and became a successful business owner and favorite massage therapist to some of the most discriminating clients in the world, A-list celebrities, politicians, professional athletes, and world-famous companies who uphold the highest standards. After sharing industry secrets and offering advice to more than 100 massage therapists, she finally decided it was time to give back to the profession on a larger scale. She sat down and wrote the first chapter of The Magic Touch. Megan donates time and resources to many charitable organizations. She is donating a percentage of the proceeds from her book, The Magic Touch, How to Make $100,000 per Year as a Massage Therapist, to three specific organizations, Child Haven, Kids, and Free Arts, New York City. Megan, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Hi, Don. Hi, Eric. Thanks so much for this wonderful opportunity.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you, and I know we all have some questions coming in on the line, so why don't we get right into the interview. First of all, tell us what inspired you to write The Magic Touch, How to Make $100,000 per Year as a Massage Therapist.
Well, as you just said, I was mentoring a lot of massage therapists in the world, in Seattle, in the Seattle area specifically, and the second half of my career was, for me, it was just amazing. I had a wonderful time, and I had to overcome a lot of hurdles to get there. And I just really felt inspired to take my mentorship onto another level, a bigger level, and hopefully affect more massage therapists that way. When I was out working with different massage therapists and meeting different massage therapists in this area and in some other areas, I noticed consistently that it wasn't necessarily the ones who had the best healing ability who were earning a good living. And oftentimes I found that it was the ones that were business savvy that were, and the ones that were very, very gifted healers and were very passionate about what they were doing were not necessarily paying the bills. And quite frankly, I just didn't think it was fair. And it took me a long time to figure out how to be a business person, how to combine those attributes with my healing tendencies. And it was a long, hard journey, and I think I was inspired to sit down and write this book just to make sure that other massage therapists didn't go through what I had to go through to get to the other side, because the other side is so great, and I didn't have to waste so much time getting there.
Yes. In fact, I was quite struck by reading your book that initially it starts with some of the real challenges, personal challenges you had to overcome in order to be prosperous in the massage therapy field. So I really enjoyed the balance in the book between the very personal aspects and the very pragmatic advice in discussing how you can create a more profitable practice. Now tell me, in the first 3 months after the release of The Magic Touch, the book has been ranking in the top 10 massage books on Amazon, and even more impressively has recently become one of the top 40 small business entrepreneurial books on Kindle. To what do you attribute the book's swift rise in popularity, not only in the massage market, but in the business market?
It's been very exciting watching, I call it my little engine that could sort of climb up the ranks and so quickly, and mostly through word of mouth, which I think is just the best part of all of it. I have had some great support in the world of massage therapy. You know, I say in the book that I didn't have any mentors in this profession when you know, for the 14 years I was in it, quite honestly, I didn't. But what I found is now going out in the world with this project, I have so much support from the massage community. I think people are really excited about, you know, my honesty and the things that I've put in this book that maybe weren't all in one place at once. You know, different people have been saying it everywhere in different ways, but not in maybe in one place. So I definitely have to give a lot of thanks to the massage community for the help that they have put into it. I think, you know, I also think a good business book and a good inspirational story is universal. So, you know, as you know, the average massage therapist's income is around $20,000 per year. So I think obviously the title is catchy. I do think in some ways, though, that the title was a bit of a hindrance. I think a lot of people looked at that and still do and think, oh, there's just no way. You know, or this is just going to be another one of those kind of books or something. So I think when people actually pick up the book and read it, they're genuinely surprised that it is a nuanced book, that I really do care, that I've invested a lot of myself in it, and that I've filled it with all sorts of things that I've learned from all kinds of therapists who have made $100,000 a year or more as a massage therapist. And then, you know, ultimately, I had to write the book. I don't know how to explain it any better than that. It was just one of those feelings. I almost felt like it was divine. I mean, it was just something I had to do. I was so compelled. It was all I could think about for a year.
Sounds like it became a calling for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was absolutely a calling, and I just hope that it creates a lot of good in our profession, because that was my intention. You know, as for the business world grabbing onto it, I think that we have a really unique business, but it is a business. And if you can get out there and talk to a community of people who are averaging $20,000 about how to make five times more money, that's going to translate in any business, and that's going to be inspiring in any business. And I think it's important, you know, even as massage therapists, or especially as massage therapists, for us to also get out and really broaden our horizons and read a lot of different business information, you know, in order to become healers that are recognized as business people in the world.
Now, you mentioned that the average massage therapist earns about $20,000 a year. What information are you offering massage therapists in your book, The Magic Touch, that you feel has previously not been emphasized enough in the average massage therapist education?
You know, my chapter on do's and don'ts, I think that that's just a really great chapter in itself, because throughout the years of working with the most discriminating clients in the world, you know, they revealed to me, as I would try new things and things that I thought were better than what were being taught, or what was the common denominator within my peer group, I would get responses and people would say, I'm so glad that you do such and such. And I have never told another massage therapist this, because I don't want to come across as a meanie or, you know, judgmental or whatever. But they would tell me. And I would hear the same things over and over and over again that massage therapists were doing, that, you know, were being taught in the schools, and a lot of them are certain common denominators. There's sort of a social agreement, I think, in the culture of massage therapists that things are okay. But what I was hearing from the clients was that they weren't. And it all comes down to the most simple things. You know, it's the choice, you know, it's oil versus lotion. It's, you know, not giving energy work without asking first. Calling the person who comes to see you, who schedules with you, call them a client. Don't call them a patient. Even if you're in the medical sphere of things, what I hear over and over again is that, you know, even if they're going in for preventative care to take care of an injury, these people typically don't want to think that they're at the doctor's office. Like, that's the last place they want to go. You know, they joke and say, I only go to the doctor when I'm dying. Don't call me a patient. Mm-hmm. All these things that we would never think of because, you know, our clients haven't told us. But our clients are the ones that we need to be listening to. So, I mean, I think, you know, that's just one chapter. I get into so many different ways of how you can increase your success in this industry and connect with clients. And, you know, just because I worked with discriminating clients doesn't mean, you know, I've worked with all kinds of clients. I've had all kinds of different types of massage businesses, from mobile spas to injury treatment to working in hotels. The thing is that if you can please the discriminating clients, you can please any client, and you can turn any client into a repeat client, but you have to know how to do that. And I think, you know, I'm hoping that this book is the beginning of a conversation like that. I mean, I see these conversations a lot, you know, in blogs. There are a lot of massage mentors out there talking about it, but I haven't so far seen it all in one book. So there's a long answer to that.
It's a good answer.
Thank you.
Now, in your book, you say you can feel your client's pain, which is an amazing gift, but in the beginning of your profession, you carried the pain of your clients with you until you were nearly debilitated. What was the belief pattern that you carried that changed for you to be able to use this gift, not have it use you?
That is a great question. Yes, for the longest time, I knew on some level that it was a gift, that I could feel my client's pain. But it felt like the blessed curse because I was carrying all of the pain home with me at night. And for the first 7 years when I was practicing full-time as a massage therapist, I often had to take breaks from it. I spent all of my time off in bed with fevers. I was absolutely exhausted. And I look back and I can see that my belief was that, you know, you had to suffer to be change in the world. You know, all of the great martyrs had suffered, right? Some of them had died. So, you know, I didn't know any other way. And in school they talked about putting on gloves or imagining yourself, you know, be a tree with roots in the ground. And I had tried everything and nothing was working. And I really had just resigned myself to this is how it must be in order for me to do my work as a healer. And so, you know, the reward, because I wasn't able to sustain my lifestyle, I wasn't able to pay my bills, I was, you know, always late on my rent for my studio apartment. I mean, you know, I'm sick all the time. So my reward was in that massage room, in that moment, the client just thinking that my work was so amazing and they couldn't believe that I had taken, you know, their pain had just disappeared. And there was no one around to talk to about it. I didn't know what to do with it. And, you know, I think I literally came to a crossroads where I had an absolute breakdown. And, you know, I feel like I can look back at myself. I must have, like, been shaking my fists at the sky, you know, saying, why? I'm such a good healer. Why can't, you know, I just make enough money not to have to dig around in the couch for money for a burrito for lunch, you know. I can't do this anymore. And this is something that's actually not in the book, but I had this moment of clarity, and it was almost like, you know, at the end of all this crying, I remember light coming through the windows, and I remember sort of this thought, okay, so let's say I sent you $60,000 next year. That was so much money to me at that time, I couldn't even imagine. What would your life be like now? This is what the thought said. Would you be dating the same person? Would you be friends with so-and-so? And if not, why are you now? And all of a sudden it was like, like I said, just so much clarity. I just understood that it was about boundaries throughout my entire life. It wasn't separate. My life on the outside of the massage room wasn't any different than my life inside of the massage room. And if I didn't have those boundaries established, and if I didn't have the self-esteem, you know, out in my daily life, and if I wasn't able to accept that, you know, that I could heal and affect the world in a positive way without hurting, it wasn't going to happen for me. And I really at that point felt that if I didn't figure out how to change it, either I wasn't going to be able to be a massage therapist anymore, which broke my heart, or I was going to die at a young age because I was absolutely taking on too much and I was too sick all the time. So I went out in the world and just imagined myself in a bubble. And, you know, it wasn't instantaneous, but I do remember as situations arise, I was able to handle them better. And I'd say within 6 months of that, I all of a sudden had this position as a massage therapist, as a contractor, that I was earning $60,000 a year. I wasn't any longer being hit on in the massage room. I didn't have strangers stopping me in the street, you know, to tell me their current life crisis. I mean, whatever I was doing worked, and I've carried that into my life, and I think it continues to work.
Wow. Truly a defining moment.
It was truly a defining moment, yeah. And I feel like there's a message in there that I can share with every healer, you know, especially the true healers. I mean, we don't have to sacrifice ourselves to do good in the world. And in fact, I think the more that we take care of ourselves, the more that we find that balance, the more powerful we can be. I truly believe that.
Hmm. Well said.
Thank you.
You've mentioned you've witnessed both highly successful massage therapists and those who constantly struggle to pay the bills. What would you say is the most observable difference between the two types of therapists?
I think the subtle difference, but most observable to some, is just the belief patterns. I think you really have to believe in what you're doing and in yourself and in the idea of being successful, whatever your definition of success is. It's certainly not money for everyone. And then I think that breaks down into things such as, you know, professionalism is huge. Representing ourselves, being okay with being business people. You know, not thinking that those two things are separate, because they're not. You can't bring a client in without maintaining a certain level of professionalism, and I think that translates through, you know, what the successful massage therapists are saying, how they're carrying themselves, what they're wearing. You know, as trite as these things might seem, they're important. You know, responding on the level that your client understands and feels comfortable with is really important. And I think one of the other differences that I see within the two is, well, I guess there's, you know, there isn't a fear of money or of success. I guess that goes back to beliefs. There's definitely an open-mindedness in the successful group. There's an ability to not shut ideas down before trying them, or before just keeping an open mind. And, you know, I can see the difference in myself. In the first 7 years of my practice, I definitely felt I was supposed to look down on providing massage in hotel environments, or I was supposed to listen to a certain kind of music for my clients. And what I find is that typically the most successful, you know, they're very much, it's the belief and being okay and keeping an open mind, but then it's hugely about being professional and listening to your clients, listening to what your clients want, above and beyond what, you know, even what you've been taught in school, even what your peers are doing as massage therapists. Find out what your clients need and give that to them. And, you will be successful.
Hmm.
I know it seems so basic, but it's not practiced as often as we would like.
Well, the most profound wisdom is often the most basic, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Now, in your book, you talk about acquiring quite a celebrity clientele with living in a smaller city. What advice would you give to massage therapists to increase their odds of attracting and retaining their dream clientele?
Well, like I was saying earlier, I think obviously it's very important to listen to your clientele, to your demographic, to each individual client. You know, if you need to take notes to remind you of what that client is interested in, their likes. For me, it started out that I was very intuitive for knowing what my client would need. And so, you know, choices of music, choices of lotion, paying attention to all of the details in your space, in your massage space, is very important. Communicating with your client, again, on a level that they appreciate. You know, there are so many times I've been in a situation where, you know, obviously I don't begin conversation with the client, and I do try to give them as much quiet time as possible, but I do talk about in the book how some of them just really like to talk to you. And it's, you know, figuring out how to be true to yourself and how to show that you're a nuanced person and you have a lot of interest, and still stay on the same level as your client. You know, trying to avoid those sticky situations where they bring up things that you absolutely don't believe in, and maybe they're kind of poking at you a little bit. Just, you know, staying on course, staying professional. With celebrities themselves, don't be starstruck. I mean, you know, that's the first step. You know, remember that they're human. It probably helps that I don't have a television. But, you know, every
client...
They still
put their pants on one leg at a time.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, there are moments when that's hard to remember. You know, someone comes into your, you know, comes into your space and they're going to be on your table, you're going to put your hands on them, and they were your idol when you were a kid, you know. So it's easy to say, but it is something that you learn. It's a learned practice. And, you know, every client is a VIP. That's the reality.
Uh-huh.
Every client that's on your table, I don't care what they do. I don't care who they are. And if you can master that, then, you know, sky's the limit for you. Absolutely.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that philosophy. It's worked really well for me.
Megan, I think the questions from our audience have been accumulating, and I'm going to pass the mic over to Eric Brown.
Okay.
Eric, can you give us some questions from out in the universe there?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been more people come on the line since we started the broadcast, so I just wanted to, again, remind anybody, if you have any questions about developing your massage practice and developing a $100,000 massage practice, then just type in your question in the Q&A box and submit it, and we'll try to get to some of these right now. I'm just going to bear with me for one moment. I'm just going to pull up these questions. And we've had quite a few questions come in already, Megan. So I'm going to give you some specific scenarios here. Now, there's a couple people. As I sort through them here, because there's a lot coming in, Daisy from Winchester, and there is another question with a similar theme to it. Can your book, and Daisy asks, can your book help a therapist that lives in a rural area or small to medium-sized town that has very few high-profile people, no celebrities, and cannot bill insurance directly in their state? So we've had a couple of people asking about how to develop a practice in a rural area.
I think that's a really great question, Daisy. I do try my best to incorporate ideas from all different types of people that I've seen making a great amount of income. I talk about a lot of different ways that you can reach $100 per hour average. And I think you know, depending on how small your community is, if you have a very small community and a very small access to clients, you most likely are either going to be in one of two situations. Either one, your cost of living is going to be a lot lower than someone who, say, lives in Seattle who needs to make, I think it was a $98,000 a single individual needed to make a couple of years ago just to have a bare basic living here. So, you know, that can be adjusted with a little bit, too, I think, if you're in a town of, you know, only 1,000 people. Or you're going to be in a town that the cost of living is very, very high because it's the kind of town that you have the kind of, so, you know, celebrity or wealthy people to tap into, which is why the cost of living is so high there. So there's a couple of factors there. But specifically with my book, I talk about a couple of different things. So I do break down how if you have visiting celebrities doing, you know, filming in the area, I tell you exactly how you can get into on the inside track with that film crew and actually work with them. I talk about the specifics of breaking down and bringing in $100 per hour. And I think I provide like six different routes of how you can do that, whether that be contracting, selling a product line to supplement, adding in different insurances. There typically is always either labor and industries or PIP claims, which is auto insurance, available to you. And if you combine all of those things, as well as, you know, finding your niche market, I think is really huge, then you're on the right track. And I think on top of that, an inspirational story is an inspirational story. It doesn't matter where you live. You know, I overcame a lot of hurdles, and I came from a very small town. And I think that if you are willing to find a way, you can find that way. And whether or not you choose to make $100,000 per year, I know that whatever your goal is reachable. You can reach it.
Okay, so there's a number of ways. Even if you can't raise your actual per hour rate, you're mentioning some alternative income streams like subcontracting, products, insurance that people can incorporate into their practices to basically bump up their level of income.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're charging $60 per hour, but you have a couple of trusted therapists that you can refer business to and only keep $15 per massage from them, you're going to quickly rise up to that $100 per hour.
Okay, and I want to thank Phyllis Wolf from Hayward, Wisconsin, for sending in a similar question, too, about working in a rural area or more of a depressed community. Now, you mentioned, Megan, the importance of finding a target market, and I think almost anybody that knows anything about marketing knows how important this is. So we have a few questions around that area. Nick from Fort Collins says, do you have any tips for figuring out a target market? Now, I'll give you a couple more questions here around that area with a little bit more specifics. Pam from Johnstown says, I've worked with handicapped children as an occupational therapy assistant before becoming a massage therapist, and I'm now interested in moving my massage practice to cater towards the younger population. What's the best way to break into that arena? And then I'll give you one more question because you might see these as being very much related. Here's another woman, Elizabeth from East Hartford. She's also interested in developing a niche, and she says, I'm interested in providing healing to individuals in the autism spectrum as well as lymphedema management. I feel these are two areas which are in which not much healing services are provided in my town. Now, would you say in order to provide these services, would I see more income by traveling to my clients and having a stationary office, or should I do both? So all these questions revolve around developing a target market. Can you speak to that?
I can try. I can do my best.
that's all we ask.
No, these are great questions. Yeah. So let's start, if I can start in reverse. Elizabeth, with working with autistic children, that's just fantastic, or working with children in any way I think is great. What I found with my business, it's been structured in a couple of different ways, and I do where the demand lies. So I often will combine having a space and traveling at the same time. And it really for me, I'm not someone that likes to be in just one space all the time, so this might not necessarily work for everyone. But, you know, I've always said, go where the need is. And I've found that your income really balances itself out that way, too. So, you know, for me, I know a lot of people will focus on a niche market, just providing medical massage. I think that is an amazing idea. And it works for them, but because my personality is structured in a way that I need more variety than that, I found that I've kept a balance in my income whenever I'm providing medical massage, traveling to, you know, VIPs or people who are bedridden, you know, having a space, but doing it in a way that my tax write-offs, you know, are for an advantage. So having that space located maybe in a floor of the home that I'm living in or whatever. In the end, you have to find out, I think, what your clients' needs are and, you know, do the math on it, then figure out if it's viable for you and figure out how to incorporate that. But I definitely think that it's a great idea to keep your mind open about how you can combine, having a space and traveling, and particularly in weaker economies. I think making yourself available to whatever is there is a great idea. And if you can't personally do it yourself, there's no reason why you can't contract a trusted professional to take care of the side of it that you don't feel comfortable doing, but they love doing. And you can have a mutually beneficial arrangement. And I know that makes some people uncomfortable. They don't like contracting. But, you know, honestly, I've been in situations where I have kept very, very little from my contractors, but developed a really excellent reputation because I was able to keep all the best of them around me, and they were available at short notice. And it actually grew my business leaps and bounds to where I was the first call everybody made. So there's a lot of different ways that you can look at contracting people as well. For Pam, working with handicapped children, I just think that's an incredible idea. And they're obviously, you know, this is when you want to contact places like Camp Easter Seal, Shriners, you know, contact places that make it their life cause to donate to these children, and figure out if you can start with getting grants, if you can start with providing on-site massage at some of these locations. You know, I think just go directly towards the directors of any program that have anything to do with these children and figure out, there's always a niche for you. You don't have to go in and ask, do you have an opportunity for me here? It's, you know, it's your job to educate the people on why they need you, why these children need your services, because they do. And I think it's such an untapped thing that you're moving into. It's very exciting, and I wish you the best. What's that?
Go ahead.
And as for Nick, how to find your target market, that's such, you know, that the answer to that is different for everyone. And I think, first of all, you have to ask yourself what you love. What do you love about massage? What part of it? And, you know, one of the things that I highly recommend in the Magic Touch is taking, and I know this is controversial for a lot of people, but there is a personality test called the Myers-Briggs test. And, you know, I think a lot of us always feel like, you know, the odd man out or the square peg trying to fit into a round hole. You know, I think it's pretty common. And the Myers-Briggs test is really cool because it breaks down your personality and tendencies, and it tells you whether you're a sensory person or an intuitive person. And these things aren't exactly, these are just labels, so I know it conjures up a lot of ideas of what this means. But once you find this out, it also, you know, lists all of the things that you're really, like, that you're good at, that you lean towards. I mean, I crack up because I'm an ENFP, and the whole list is I should be a massage therapist, a writer, you know, an actress, like all of these things that I really love doing, a clothing designer. I mean, these are my loves and passions. So really funny. But you could sort of, if you can't already figure it out, you know, whether you're more sports medicine oriented, whether you're more healing or spa, I think the Myers-Briggs is a good place to start. And then once you figure out what, you know, what your niche market is, like what you love, depending on how large your community is, it's a great place to start. The other thing is, you know, just from an aspect of pure numbers, being successful in a certain community, there are going to be, you know, different things that would represent a great niche market in each community. So, you know, one area is going to be a geared towards skiing. One's going to be geared towards, you know, blue-collar workers that are getting injured, et cetera, et cetera. So you also have to look at your market. I mean, you don't want to choose something that you really desire doing, but the money isn't there to back it up, because that's not going to be satisfying you either. You could, you know, end up choosing a market that makes you very happy. I mean, working with people is great. Let's be honest. Like, being a massage therapist is one of the coolest things in the world. So if you're already healing people and you're doing something that you love, you know, and being well taken care of, you may find yourself at a point where you can actually volunteer services to something else for free that makes you really happy as well. So I guess that whole long answer comes back to figure out what you love about massage therapy and go for it, but don't put that ahead of making sure that the market does exist in your area.
Okay. Now, it's interesting the range of questions we're getting coming in, because they're really quite diverse. Laura Allen, who a lot of you will know from Facebook, and from Laura, you're all over the place. Well, Laura asks, do you agree that any therapist can be this successful regardless of the type of massage they practice? That is, that it's not just limited to medical massage.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. I do think that it's really important to have medical skills as a medical provider on all levels. And I think that if you're able to give great medical massage, and you have a level of intuition, you're going to be able to give a great any kind of massage. I do think, though, that sometimes there's a bad rap given to Swedish massage. It is the basis for everything that we do, most everything. Sorry about that. And yet, you know, I just feel like if you follow what you love and you do what you love and you educate people on why they need it, you will find success to some degree. I do feel like in the furthering of our profession on a grander scale, we really need to organize. You know, I think we need to get our licensing requirements higher. We all need to be on the same page about, it would be great if we all could provide an adequate level of medical treatment. I think it's just really important in the furthering of our profession. But I think every once in a while someone gets lucky and you know, makes a great living off of, you know, doing something that isn't. So, yeah, there's that. Hi, Laura.
Okay, now here's an interesting question. I get asked this one all the time because, I do a lot of work in the business arena in the massage industry, but let's get your take on it. This is Dave from New York City. And he says, what suggestions would you have for overcoming gender phobia in the industry? Seems like most employers are mostly interested in hiring female therapists. Do you have any suggestions for Dave?
That is a great question, and I ran into this so much in different environments, and some of my most favorite massage therapists are men. So I really sympathize with the plight of men in this profession. I don't think, quite often they don't get a fair shake. Each place seems to have, you know, different rules about how they work with this, but typically they will ask over the phone, you know, do you prefer whether your therapist is a male or female. And I know that that's a loaded thing for a lot of massage therapists, and I just feel that that's really unfair. But having heard the stories of my clients, I understand where some of that phobia lies, even though it's not fair. I think, you know, I think this is just such a, it's so much deeper than massage therapy, you know. I mean, it really, it cuts down through the lines of phobia on any level. And, you know, we live in a culture that still encourages some cultural phobias and sex phobias. And, you know, we still won't, you know, we don't recognize, you know, gay couples in a lot of things. And so it just, it's a societal thing. And so I wouldn't really know, I know this is not what you want to hear, but I don't really know where to start on a grander scale with expanding the industry for men, except that each individual man has a responsibility to educate on his own and to build the clientele that he needs to sustain him and to dispel the myths that are around that. And I think it can be done. I mean, I think that, like I said, some of the male therapists that I work with are just, they're geniuses. They're so brilliant at what they do. And I think it just takes one client after another. You know, it's like putting one foot in front of the other, and soon you have word of mouth, and then soon it becomes like anything else, a norm in the industry. And that's what I hope for us.
Okay. Now here's another question that a lot of therapists frequently ask. So again, let's get your take on this one. This is Stephen from Auburn, Washington. And Stephen says, how do you approach clients when raising your prices? With that said, these are clients I've worked on for over 10 years. So any suggestions in terms of how to raise prices? Is it an issue even?
Well, that's interesting. It hasn't been an issue for me in the past. I however, you know, I'm delicate. I have a delicacy to the fact that right now we are in a different economy than we were 2 years ago, and so I understand people's trepidation with this. For me, I think, you know, it's very fair that as cost of living raises, that our wages raise. That's just, you know, of course, we need to. But then there are some people that really, you know, are already stretched to the point where they can't spend that little bit more. And I think, you know, if you want to put out offers of buying packages, or, you know, if they're going to have a commitment of seeing you so-and-so so many times a year, perhaps you can stay at the original rate if it's a financial burden for them. For me, I think it's fair to work with different clients individually if they bring up issues of concern, if they're having financial concern. And then there are other clients who I find really just wouldn't bat an eyelash at it, or they actually tell me I should raise my rates, et cetera, et cetera. And so I find that it balances itself out, but you really have to be okay with what you're asking for. That's key. You know, you really just have to get to the point where you understand that you're ready to ask for more, you need more, and approach it that way. And I think, you know, just follow your heart after that. You'll know where to go with each client, you know, if they're already in need of not having that price range, and you can work something out that benefits both of you.
Okay. Now another question from Liz in Hamilton, that's in Canada. And again, this is a common scenario. She currently works at a clinic with a good clientele, paying 40% to the clinic. Is it a wise decision to set up a clinic out of my own home? What are the pros and cons?
So, is she saying just leaving the position that she's in and moving into another position? Are you sure? I mean,
yeah. So,
you know.
So I think the sense I get from this is that, you know, most therapists that are in a contracted position pay out a percentage of their fees, in this case 40%, to the clinic. And she's, I think the feeling here is that seems like a lot of money. So she's asking, mm-hmm. would it be better to set up my own clinic out of my own home? What are some of the things I need to consider there? What are the pros and cons of doing that?
Okay. Well, it's definitely situational for each person. And I am sorry to say that right now giving away 40% is actually on the low side of what people are keeping. It's really scary to me the percentages that are being kept from people these days. And I'm hard-pressed to find a massage therapist that makes more than $30 an hour anymore working for someone else. So it's one of the reasons that I really feel that it's important for the people who feel that they can take on having their own business trying to do so. The pros and cons, I think, you know, the pros are fairly obvious. If you get a practice going and, you know, and it's successful and thriving, which is a whole lot of work, then, you know, you have a certain amount of freedom. You have, you know, you can make your own decisions. You're your own free agent. And they're really, personally, I don't think there's anything cooler. But that's how I'm designed, you know. Not everyone is designed that way, and I think you have to be really clear with yourself about whether it's something, you know, some people just do a lot better working with a group of people, or, you know, not having to market for themselves, or et cetera, et cetera. So you have to figure that out for yourself. I think that the situation that you're in may be one where it's best. For me, I think it's best if you don't have a huge savings and you don't have, you know, a lot to fall back on. I think it's really important to sort of ease yourself out and, you know, build a clientele on the outside. And that is often hard to do without violating the agreement that you have with your current place. So I think I'm so pro go out and get your own business together. But everybody has a different way of how they need to do this. And so if you need to take one step at a time, if you need to cut down to 3 days a week where you're working, slowly build up your clientele outside, if you feel like you have the support where, you know, someone, your partner can support and cover the bills for a while you put 100% into that business, it's just, you know, it's your decision to be made. And there are a lot of factors included in that, in the decision-making process. I mean, you really have to sit down, I think, with an accountant and figure out what your tax write-offs are. And I would suggest doing that before you even develop a business, because you can save so much money if you buy within those tax write-offs or you make your decisions within those boundaries. Versus a lot of people go out and just spend a whole lot of money on a lot of stuff that isn't really going to benefit them and there's not going to be a return on. The pros and cons of starting your own business are the same with any business, whether you're a massage therapist or not. So you just really have to be ready for the journey of it, and you have to be ready to work very, very hard for it. But I think that the payoff is incredible.
Okay. So, again, like you say, it's really important to recognize, too, that not everyone is suited to running their own business. And sometimes it just might be a wiser idea to have somebody take care of that part of it so you can focus on your work. And just to clarify again on what you said there, do you think that 40% is an unreasonable amount to pay a clinic that you're working in?
You know, being someone who's contracted and really kept very little, I had an unusual way of setting up my business, and it was basically to be the best and have the best people working for me and ensure that I was the first call so that my business was constantly busy, and that worked for me. But that is not necessarily – that's not the case, you know, for people who are running a clinic and they have a lot of overhead. There are a lot of factors involved, and, you know, if they're billing insurance, they're having to pay before the insurance pays them back. Occasionally it doesn't. So, you know, it's not really – it would be hard for me to venture into that territory because I haven't had that business, that type of a business, so I think it would be unfair for me to speculate. I was just making a comment that 40% these days is actually – it's certainly not the worst I've heard. But that, I think, is cause for concern, that most of the time the percentage is much is much greater than that that's kept from therapists. And that's where I think we need to unite together and make sure that we're all taken care of and that people understand our value. And that comes down to educating the people that we work for, that we work with our clients, and with the greater community that don't understand what we do and how valuable it is to people's health.
Okay. Now we're getting close to the top of our hour here, so I'm going to ask just a couple more questions, and maybe we can make the answers to these relatively brief. A couple
sure.
people want some specific tactics or suggestions. So Diane in Santa Clarita says, exactly how did you market your practice or advertise your business? And Dakota Smith from Walla Walla, Washington, which is very fun to say, by the way, asks, what is the best and cheapest way to market my business? So do you have? Can you give us just a couple for specific techniques, your favorite marketing techniques to grow your clientele or your business?
Sure. Well, I've had a lot of different businesses, but some of the techniques that I've noticed have really worked for myself and other successful therapists are figuring out who markets massage in your community and going straight to them. So rather than marketing for individual clients, which is just fine, but really, you know, you're doing a lot of advertising for maybe one client, you go straight to the person in your community, whether it be a concierge, a personal trainer, a doctor, a chiropractor, whomever, and you know, establish a relationship with them where they're sending you referrals. So this can work with anything. That's one of the best ways that I've seen. And in terms of advertisement, if you're going to do, I don't really believe in paper advertisement anymore. I think it's by far and large, most of it is not very profitable. But if you're going to do it, I think remember that you're not stuck with one image. So, you know, you're not even stuck with one business name. So you can really, at times, like there was a time when I was Urban Massage, and that really focused on a demographic of businesses and doing seated massage, and I was also Spa Umi, and that focused on, you know, working with a different demographic entirely. And it worked. You know, I got calls in on both of those ads and was able to have a broader reach. So you're not limited to traditional advertising that way either. I'm just starting to experience social networking and getting involved in that, and I think it's amazing. You know, I also think that, and this is something that I've been very poor at recently, but what I've observed is that if you have a blog attached to your website and you get really adept at using keyword searches, that can be very instrumental to you. You really don't need a lot of expense to have people find your website anymore. You just need to be smart about the keywords. So you just go to Google, AdWords, type in a keyword phrase, and they're going to pull up all the ones that would be beneficial for you to use. And then the question, how did I market? Well, I just revealed a couple of the ways. And, you know, it was different for each market. And I think I was really, people don't want to hear this, but I think I was really lucky with my reputation. I think you know, I really earned a reputation working within a very large, reputable hotel that I took with me, and I didn't really have to market a whole lot. You know, once I had built the VIP clientele that I had, they sort of kept calling me. So personally, I didn't have to market that much. When it came to my business, I found the niche that was missing. Concierge in the hotels were making calls to call people, and it hadn't occurred to any one of them that there actually could be, you know, one, that they could make one call. And I made that clear to them. I said, you know, you already call me first, but then you go down a list of all these other therapists, and I'm noticing that the ones who are really excellent therapists aren't getting the work. And, you know, what about if I call them for you? And so it was just basically finding a niche that hadn't been fulfilled that was right there in front of all of our faces. And I think that's a lot of marketing, finding, you know, find the greatest source of referrals for you that hasn't been tapped into, find what that source of referrals is missing or needs that they don't yet know they need, educate them on why they do, and you'll have the door swing wide open for you.
Okay, so it's not just blind, it's just not dumb luck. It's looking out for opportunities, really, and being
Absolutely.
Able to identify those opportunities as they arise. Now, I know we're coming up to the top of our hour, and I am going to squeeze another question in here. And I see that people are staying on the call, so that's fantastic. Thanks, everyone, for sticking around, and thanks for submitting your questions, because there's more questions coming in as well. Before I ask this next question, though, Mireille from Ottawa, bonjour Mireille, she says she missed what was said earlier. I want to remind everybody on the line that a replay will be available almost immediately after the call, so you can refer back to this at any point in time. And by all means, feel free to tell your friends about Massage Therapy Radio and let them know that this is online for them to refer to. Now, this is the last question I'm going to ask for the evening, Megan. And then I'll pass the mic back to Dawn to close up. Deborah from Austin says, Austin has one of the best massage schools in Texas. As a result, we have a large amount of therapists to compete with. There are also about 11 franchises in the city. Do you have any tips or ideas for a therapist up against these odds? So how, I guess what the real question is how do you deal with a high level of competition?
Great question, because when I was, you know, really out here trying to build a business, Seattle was the most competitive city in the world for massage. So I know how it feels to think that you have all of these odds stacked against you. In reality, that doesn't really, none of that has anything to do with you. And in fact, each one of those businesses is fulfilling a certain market demographic. It doesn't mean it's fulfilling yours. It doesn't mean that those places currently have your clients, or that your clients have even been educated yet as to why they would want to see you. It's your job to go out in the world and tell people why they need to see you, what it is about your healing touch that's necessary in their life, without being pushy, of course. But don't let that affect you. In fact, I would say let that motivate you, because these businesses, though they may be looking as if they're doing something really great in one area, they're lacking in another. And there are always opportunities, and this is the thing that I really think as massage therapists we need to understand. We're in our infancy as a profession. We have so many places that we can grow and expand, and all you have to do is look for them. You just have to look for them, and then you have to educate people on why they're there, but they're everywhere. So don't let that worry you. Don't let a whole bunch of new graduates influxing into an area worry you. I think we all need to get together and worry about why so few people understand that massage is a necessity for health and well-being, and how we can get together, and make that not a reality anymore. Make people absolutely understand why they need to be getting their massage, once a week or twice a month or once a month, and why to fit it into the budget. Just don't. Don't let it kill you, don't let it kill your spirit. I went through the same thing, and I would say that if you're determined, you keep an open mind, you listen to your clients, you look, you think outside of the box, and you look for that opening, it doesn't matter what anyone else is doing, because you'll find your sweet spot.
Okay, and on that note, I just want to convey a few compliments from people that have submitted them online. Liz says, the advice is great. Mike Hinkle says, you've done a great job. Thank you for all your research and your book. He wants to get you signing autographs at the festival. Lisa Mertz from New York says, you're awesome. My students enjoy the way your sense of humor comes through the book. Phyllis Wolf from Hayward is saying, I love Magic Touch. Dakota Smith, I've mentioned this one already. She says, hi, Megan, love, love, love your book. So lots of love going on there. So on that note, I'm going to pass it back to Don, and I think Don has another question for you, too, before he closes up.
Okay, great.
Thanks very much, Eric. Megan, my goodness, we've had a lot of excitement on the line today. Many people calling in with questions. So let's end on a note with this one. In Chapter 4, The Do's and Don'ts, you talk about how you acquired a massage-a-day client by understanding and listening to his needs in a way that his previous massage therapist had refused to. And as a result, she lost $1 million in estimated earnings over the next 10 years from this one client. You go on to say that the mistake she made is a common one, and that, in fact, massage therapists lose valuable connections and clients by making the tiniest mistakes that, when grouped together, make a huge negative impact. Tell me some of the mistakes you feel massage therapists make that keep clients from calling back for a second appointment.
Well, we touched on this a little bit earlier in the do's and don'ts, and they are all the most simple things, I think. I think I want to tell you this story really quickly so that you understand an example of this. This is a client of mine who I think actually he would have given this woman about $1 million over, I think it was 20 years, not 10. But he's very devoted, gets a massage a day, is very generous with his money, you know, with the payment that he gives for massages, buys them for other visiting celebrities, you know, his wife, family members, et cetera, et cetera. And you can imagine it adds up very quickly. And he had been working with this woman for 10 years. And the way that he relayed the story, he said, you know, she'd been getting weirder and weirder. And I kept telling her and reminding her I didn't really like this woo-woo stuff. I think this is something that we can all understand. And one day, she was going on and on about how sprinkling flower essences over her friend who was dying of cancer had saved her life. And this is something that, you know, I think a lot of people share this belief, but my client didn't. And he was very offended because he had asked her to stop a couple of times during the massage. And at the end of this massage, well, no, I'm sorry, they didn't get to the end. Actually, in the middle of the massage, he said, how long have you been my massage therapist? And she said, 10 years. And he said, yeah. And, you know, I'm sorry to say, but now I want you to turn around and walk out the door and don't come back. And I know he sounds like a meanie, right? But the reality is she was doing so many things that she shouldn't have been. I mean, one, she was pushing her agenda beyond the client's comfort level. And two, I mean, she was, you know, she was talking through a massage when her client just wanted to relax. It seems like the most simple and innocent thing, you know, in that moment where we're so caught up, like maybe we're on the fifth massage and we're just tired of maybe not talking anymore. Or we just want someone to connect with us, or we just want whatever we want. But the majority of the time, you don't get a second chance to say you're sorry or to prove that you can do differently because that client doesn't come back. And in cases like this, you can lose $1 million over 20 years. And there's always someone else out there. There's another massage therapist there waiting to take that business and to do the right thing for that client. So sometimes you only get a first chance. And that story really affected me.
That's
and I have a great relationship with him now.
Yeah, that's a high price to pay for not listening well.
Isn't it? Yeah, and we know better, but sometimes I think these things just need to be re-impressed in us. And
yes.
Yeah, so yeah, sometimes, you know, some of the things in the chapter you'll think are very basic, but to someone else it's going to be a light bulb that goes off. But they are all critical from what I've heard from my clients. You don't want to violate the things in the do's and don'ts. It won't be good for your business.
Well, Megan, I've greatly enjoyed your book and our interview tonight, and I hope that our listeners out there will take a chance to listen to the replay of this broadcast, and we'll pick up your book and have a look. So I want to thank Megan Holub for joining us tonight to talk about the magic touch, how to make $100,000 per year as a massage therapist. I also want to thank my co-host, Eric Brown, for joining us tonight and helping out with the questions that were fielded in from our listeners. I just want to remind our audience again to come back to massagetherapyradio.com to listen to a replay of this and other broadcasts that we've done over the years of all these great massage therapists. And hope you'll join us on our next interview in 2 weeks when I sit in the guest seat and we talk about even better business agreements. That's on Thursday, February 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So on behalf of my co-host and my guest tonight, thank you. And good night.